So the whole hope for the number one pick ended very quickly for the Bulls last night. This is about what we expected, though, for them to be in the place of somewhere between like 10 and 12 inside of the draft lottery. It just kind of hit with a thud last night. What was it like experiencing it as someone who covers the Bulls every day?
Yeah, to be clear, 85.23% of me expected that to happen. That was the exact chance of the Bulls getting the 12th pick. That's what they got at McCormick Place last night for the lottery. And like you said, it kind of comes fast, right? You're waiting around the ESPN broadcast when you're in the ballroom. Then they finally go up on stage. Tim Sinclair leads it off and everything. But those envelopes come out, and you see Bulls go up at 12. And then all of a sudden, you're like, they're back in the same exact spot. Everyone else's attention in the room certainly turning to the number one pick and who's going to get Cooper Flagg and the Mavericks getting that opportunity last night. But for the Bulls, it feels like much of the same as they move forward here.
When did you catch wind of the coin flip? Like, when did that story, the fact that the Mavericks were going to end up where they were, like, did that develop, just how close the Bulls they got to what ended up being the number one pick? How did that story develop in the room?
Yeah, I mean, mostly that was developing among Chicago media members standing around talking right after it happened, right? Like, we're staring at the lottery sheet. We were aware they had 39 wins, just like the Mavericks. And then we go backwards, rewind in our mind. I think it was April 21st or so when they held that random tiebreaker. And a lot of the times you don't think too much of it at the time, right? When it's a tiebreaker between 11 and 12 and not a tiebreaker between something like 4 or 5, something like that. So you just kind of put two and two together and you're thinking about it. And I don't know that it's like a big storyline topic to discuss with the Bulls themselves, you know, like, what would you have done differently in the random tiebreaker? You can't really ask them that stuff. I think there's certainly bigger picture philosophical organizational decisions to track back and see. My argument all along, if you trace back to the start of the season, was pretty quickly it felt like to me there's no way they're going to be in the race to the bottom three or four, right? The way the Wizards played basketball, the Hornets certainly took a nosedive early in the season, the Jazz wanted no part of winning this season. But you look at that, after that, there was opportunity to go 5 to 8 range. And again, the Bulls could have tried to do that and ended up 6th worst team and then been 8th in the order or something like that. But you look at it, a team that was 5th worst and 8th worst were two of the teams that hopped up into the top three. So this draft isn't all about Cooper Flagg. Like, just a top 3 or 4 pick would have been huge for the Bulls. So you look at that, that's where it feels like there was a little bit missed opportunity. But, you know, we've talked about this story 100 times. They want to win. They want to be competitive. That's how they're moving forward. Every single sign you look at for next season and everything you talk to with people is that they're going to roll it back and it's going to look a lot like this past season.
But it's staying on the logic of it, because yeah. I agree, you can't say like, oh, they should have done better in the coin flip.
Yeah.
It's kind of a logical mess to do any takeaways from last night, isn't it? Because you have the anti-tank thing entirely, and then you have Dallas is getting yep. rewarded with a coin flip. It's a lottery anyway. Like, I feel yes. like it's a logical mess.
The one takeaway that you could have that's separate from the luck of the draw is that if you had been worse and you believe that, like, you really believe in 6, 7, 8 players in this class, there would have been a lot of logic to make sure even to stay in the top 8, right? Like, the Bulls are at 12 because they had the 12th, 11th worst record or so in the NBA. If you have that 8th worst record and the cutoff is somewhere between 8 and 12, and look, this will play out over the next month as we learn more about these prospects and hear more. To me, like, it does feel like there's a few tiers of this draft, and certainly Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper are right there at the top in that order. Then there's another group, and then I don't know where that cutoff is, but kind of might feel like the Bulls might be on the outside of that second tier too. So when you look at the strength of the draft and why it was talked about so much, wasn't just one or two guys, because people felt like there was some depth to this, and now you're not in range as much of depth. So they have to believe in their scouting, hope that a talent like Matas Buzelis is available somewhere around that range, and then correctly execute on a draft pick. But that is harder at 12 than it would have been if they'd gotten lucky into the top 4, or even if they were at 6 or 7. So, again, we've gone over that territory so much, but I think this is a couple days to reflect on that when you have a pivot point like this, certainly. But they, again, This is going to feel like last year when we look ahead to next year. It doesn't mean we'll have the same 15 players that we're watching every night, but it is going to feel much the same, I think, in the way they compete and what their goals are.
Nico Harrison shouldn't be feeling validated, though, right?
No, but he certainly looked validated while celebrating.
He really did.
And he wasn't in the ballroom, I don't believe. At least I didn't see him in the video going around. It looked like a private room.
Yeah.
Certainly somewhere. So even in a setting where there weren't going to be fans booing him, he seemed to feel best just staying in the spotlight, obviously, which you can understand from a human level for him. But at the same time, no, because this is all luck. You know what I mean? The Mavs got lucky with their 1.8% chances. The Bulls' 1.7% chance didn't work. And there's a lot of teams with 14% chances and 12.5 who are mad that the Mavs got it and they didn't. So this is a key point in all of this, too. You were talking about this in the show open, I think, Speaks. Is it fair to teams, you know, like the Wizards, to not get a good pick? And what, I think they fell all the way 5-6, somewhere in that range.
Right, because the whole thing is designed theoretically to help the very worst teams.
But this is what the NBA wanted. They wanted there to be more randomness in this because of how teams were tanking.
They
but
didn't
the
want to reward tanking.
Correct, but Cooper Flagg's just so good, and these prospects next year are so good that the tanking's still going to shamelessly happen. So, like, the NBA got what they wanted, but it doesn't mean their vision of slowing tanking is working. They wanted more randomness. And I will say, this is a key point, the last 2 years have been very random, with the Hawks jumping from 10 to 1 and now the Mavs from 11 to 1. But prior to that, it was four straight years when you're looking at Anthony Edwards to the Wolves, you're looking at Cade Cunningham to the Pistons, Paolo Banchero to the Magic, Wemby to the Spurs. Those four teams had records that were the second or third worst records in the NBA. So it has played out in the sense that the team with the worst record in the NBA since they instituted the flat 14% odds for the top three teams in 2019, the team with the worst record hasn't gotten the number one pick. But it's not to say being really bad isn't helpful, because those second and third teams have gotten up. But this is like, this is what the NBA lottery is. It's like once a year we're all like, oh man, we got to learn math again. We got to realize how this works. Like, what's lucky? What's good? What's bad? And it all just comes in the spotlight when the ping pong balls fly out.
Cody Westerlund joining us here. He covers the Bulls for us here at The Score. So how can the Bulls get better? Like, well, what are the options for them as you see it for them to get better?
Well, they just have to hit on draft picks. Like, there's nothing more important for the Bulls than to hit on draft picks. And again, that doesn't have to be luck and Cooper Flagg. But last year, it looks like they're going to hit on one with Matas Buzelis. They need to be that productive every year. And that doesn't mean they're going to get an all-star every year. But get the best value in someone that can help and be in your rotation. And looks like they have two-way ability. That's another thing with the Bulls that's kind of in the past 5 years, obviously, been a problem. They got a lot of guys who are only defense players or all offense players. So you look forward. The draft pick is a commodity, right? There are three ways to get a star. You can sign one in free agency. You can draft one. You can trade for one. Well, the only way to trade for one is if you have a lot of assets to trade to other teams. The only way to attract a star free agent is if you have good young talent or good established players. You control those two things. You don't control your draft lottery odds, obviously. You can control the odds to an extent. You can't control how it plays out in the lottery, obviously, but they've just got to keep adding to the young talent core base. And if you want to be the optimistic Bulls fan, it's still going to be hard, I think, to get through the 25-26 season. But if you get to summer 2026 and hit this number 12 draft pick, just a decent, solid player that can be part of your team, the books clear up. You have your future draft capital, and there's a window, a prism to be like, a few years from that, yes, you know, you can attract a star free agent, or you can trade for a good young player to be more of a core member. But like, the only way that happens is success in the NBA draft for the Bulls.
So tell me why I shouldn't expect Kasparis Giakoshonis of Illinois to be the pick at 12. I know they have a lot of guards, and I know they already have people. but my God, it just seems like it's fated to happen. And maybe Coby White gets traded, or maybe...
Here's why.
Tell me why, because if he's there, he might actually be the best player, the best, like, fully rounded player. Because there's, like, some 3-and-D guys, some rotational pieces, those kind of things. But you got to try and find upside at 12 at this point.
I like where your head's at on the upside angle. He plays a lot like Josh Giddey in the sense that needs the ball in his hands, right? Not a guy who's scoring 25 a game, but a guy who can score. Obviously, I think he has a little bit more mid-range ability than Josh Giddey and such, but they are very similar prototype players to me in the sense serious question marks on the defensive end. Ball in your hands, what happens when you're off the ball? I think KJ would be better off the ball than Giddey. Would be, but look, he had a great start to his season at Illinois last year, really lagged in the middle of Big Ten play for a while, had some great games, had some disappointing games down the stretch, but he's a good talent. I also don't think he'll make it to 12, and I think there's some overlap there for the Bulls, but like he's got defensive question marks certainly on that end too, but I do like where your head's at. Like, I think he can be a very successful NBA player in the right setting. Absolutely.
I think he's going to be a good pro, and I think he fits the style that they want to play.
I think he fits the NBA style in general, right? Just size, the willingness to pass, the ability to use that size to affect the game on various points of the floor.
We often talk about this in terms of football, but the draft combine for the NBA is coming up in the city in a little bit, too. How do basketball people judge combine stuff versus tape?
It's hard. It's a question that organizations view differently. And I think when you're at the top of the draft, right, you got to have both. But there's certainly a point in your evaluation process and the point in the draft order where you have to make a decision on that potential versus someone who's already proved more on the floor at a college level. And you look at this just from the Bulls perspective in recent years, like what was Dalen Terry? That was mostly an upside play, right? He didn't have a huge statistical year at Arizona in college before they drafted him or anything like that. They drafted him for his tools, his length, his defensive ability, what they thought he could translate to and develop into as a shooter. And we haven't seen enough of that. We saw a few flashes last year, but it is a very difficult question for people. I tend to think I hedge toward, you know, having proved it, obviously. But, like, there's swings. Certainly, if you're in the middle of the first round, you want to take that big swing. It makes sense. But a lot of these guys in the top 10, when you're in the top half of the lottery, I would hedge toward someone who's proved something.
So the headline, Cody, is that they chose the middle.
Yep.
And they get rewarded with more middle.
Yep.
And it looks like a whole nother season of the middle.
Yep.
And it would take like miracles in the offseason in terms of trades to really change the makeup of this entire franchise at this point.
Yeah, if you're talking about a 1-year window, correct. It would take a miracle to overhaul it and change it. I think, again, if you want to look farther out, I think it's more optimistic to look farther out. I think it's going to be tough next year because, look, I expect Coby probably to still be here. I would listen to offers for everyone, but he proved a lot. And he is a good player you want to have on your team. Josh Giddey's obviously in the picture as he's headed for restricted free agency.
The difference between them and all these teams we're watching in the playoffs is just so massive.
Yeah, and Callie was making that point earlier. It's like that space and pace is great in the regular season, but there does come a time in the playoffs where
you need ISO basketball.
You need stars. You need some ISO ball. You need to be more physical. You need to be able to do everything. And look, the Bulls got better at doing some things, running in three-pointers last year, but they are still really far away from being well-rounded in a complete team and even just having players in a setting who are well-rounded and complete. So that's where it gets difficult. And I don't expect anything to be changing here either, like leadership structure-wise we've talked about. I mean, I would probably expect Billy Donovan to get a contract extension this offseason. I don't know exactly how much longer AK's contract goes, but it feels like he's going to be here for another year at least and stay in there and everything. So
everybody's got to be patient. He wants you to be patient.
The decision-makers you see now are still the same people who have the same voices moving forward in the immediate future.